following original talk show is rated NU. No usury abuse is tolerated. Some content may be offensive to term life insurance plan owners. Chestertonian discretion is advised.
I get my hands on the dollar again. I'll hang on to it.
Oprah Winfrey has no talk show these days. Harry Carey can't have a talk show anymore. But when David Simpson talks, people listen. And so will you to The True Money Show, exclusively on the Veritas Radio Network channel's Crusade.
Well, I'm not down and out today. I am up. I'm still in an Easter glow. You know, I read in my missal when I was in church that people would not work for 8 days after Easter. They actually took the octave of Easter off, and they did not work. The festival began, it went on for a full Easter and eight more days.
Who says we're working?
Well, here we are.
We could be having fun here.
Well, we are having fun, but you got to admit we're back at it. We are kind of doing the grindstone here. But so I love my missal because it has all these explanatory things throughout it. And I was so impressed. I just leaned over and showed my wife. I said, "Look at this." You know, this was a time when people had such faith, and it was such an important issue to them that the resurrection of our Lord on Easter Sunday warranted having a literal festival, no work, all play and feast and joy for 8 days. That's amazing. I'm still in the Easter glow. I'm going to stay in the Easter glow. I don't care what happens to me. And even though I'm reading some of these terrible stories or I'm working on some of these idiotic points about how to pick a stop based on their political positions, the leaders of the companies, give me whatever. Okay. But all this you see coincides with my financial question of the day. You're listening to the True Money Show on the Crusade Channel. I'm David Simpson. My financial question of the day is economics a fair or reliable ethical guide? And so you saw in the first segment, I talked about this woman, Laura Hoy, wrote an article. What was it called? Four Stocks That Made Their Politics Public. And she thought, oh, it's a dangerous proposition, but boy, it sure is necessary for companies to go out in this political no man's land and state these liberal, supposedly progressive causes because it's the right thing to do. Well, no, it's not the right thing to do. That's why your companies are being punished by people boycotting them. But you see, so there's one indication. Is that a good ethical guide, economics, or even public opinion about your economic policies? Well, we're going to continue on. If you want to answer the question of the day, is economics a fair or reliable guide? You can email me, david@tffco.com, or you can call in. Our phone lines are always open, always ready to receive your calls. Young Christopher will jump on that phone call faster than you can say, Lemony Snicket. 844-527-8723. I have a sneaky suspicion there'll be a Lemony Cricket soundbite here any minute now. Anyway, I am reading an article, 20th Century Hero, my newest 20th Century Hero, Moise Tshombe. I'll get back to him in a minute. But let me just announce that Suzanne Option's show will be on right after mine, coming up right after my show, 1 o'clock. Don't touch that icon. You want to hear a show about prepping? Then tune in to the Suzanne Option. She's on every, Thursday and Friday at 1 o'clock, right? So you get her twice a week right here on the Crusade Channel. My show, True Money Shows, comes to you every day from 11 to 1. If I'm not in here, they're playing a best of. That's okay. You can re-listen to something. I think all topics that not just I cover, but every show here, Mike's show, Mark Cresson's show, Reverse Deception, Suzanne Option, My Story of America, they're worth hearing again. Because do any of us get the truth the first time around? I have to study it sometimes a dozen times before it gets through my thick skull. So listening to shows again is not a bad idea. That's why, I don't know if you know this or not, but you can log into our website and download every show from the past. It's amazing. You know what else we got on the website? We have a store. Some of you are saying to yourself, oh, I can't afford a monthly subscription, or everybody's chewing me up a month by month. I got my cell bill and my television, cable bill, my heating and water, my AC and blah, blah, blah. I got all these bills on a monthly basis. I can't add one more. I get it. What if you could buy a product that you wanted that also helped the Crusade Channel? Go to any of our websites, crusadechannel.com, mychurch.com, veritasradionetwork.com, and look for the shop button. Sign, go to the store, look at all the various things we have in there. I'll just say, look, I'll hawk something right now. My own book, Financial Sanity and Three Easy Lessons. It's in there. Anytime you buy a book or a DVD, you buy a, oh my gosh, Mike's got cigars in there, shirts, he's got caps, he's got little, this little sticker I have right here, the flag of the Carillon du Sacré Cœur. That's actually a sticker you can put in the back of your car. It's a beautiful flag. If you want to buy the flag, I think we still have some of those. But if there's no more flags, we still have these little bumper sticker versions of it. Buy one of those. Any purchase in the store supports the Crusade Channel and keeps us in business, keeps the lights on. All right. So, again, the financial question today, if you want to call in, David at TFFCO.com, which I'll check right now just to make sure no one has written in the last few minutes. Or you can call me, 844-5-CRUSADE, 844-527-8723. Let's go on with Moise Tshombe. You know, most of us have absolutely no understanding of African history. It's almost like it's the shunned, we call it the dark continent. It's almost like it's the shunned continent, maybe the exploited continent. It's having a vast Christian resurgence there in Africa, which is wonderful. I think it's the fastest growing Christian population in the world, percentage wise. So why do we ignore our Christian brothers in Africa so much? Why do we not know any of their history? Well, here's part of their history. And I will say this, it paints a pretty ugly picture of the United Nations. Who would have thought that? And unfortunately, the European and American powers. So Moise Tshombe, born in 1919, father had a successful business. Moise showed no aptitude for business. He decides this. Leaving the affairs of the family business to his brother, young Moise entered politics, where he quickly rose to prominence. Much of his success can be traced to his strength of character and personality. As a public figure, Tshombe was always commended for his hearty laugh, his ready wit, and his personal integrity. He was noted for his tremendous work ethic. He once told a group of loafers, quote, "What do you mean you don't have enough to eat? I see you drinking beer at 9 o'clock in the morning. First work, then drink your beer. Otherwise, don't complain," close quote. I love that, right? There are lots of loafers in America who are looking for the next handout, and I would tell them the exact same thing. I'll hand out all kind of stuff to you, but I want to see you have a little bit of spirit in you first, that you're willing to work for it. In his book, Tshombe, biographer Anthony Bouscarin records that Tshombe was, quote, "first and foremost a conservative as concerning his Christian faith, natural caution, and anti-communist convictions. Yet this same Tshombe has taken risks and exhibited remarkable courage when confronted with almost impossible odds. He is above all an enlightened African who understands the shortcomings of his own people and who is willing to learn from the West. He is patient and shrewd, and he is loyal to his friends. He is very friendly, and his personal magnetism disarms even the most hostile critics," close quote. That was Anthony Bouscarin writing a book, Tshombe. After more, so back to the article, I'm reading from 20th Century Heroes. The title of the article is "Africa's Brief Ray of Hope," and it's about Moise Tshombe, a man of faith, integrity, and conviction. Moise Tshombe shone brightly as a light of liberty amidst the dark continent. It's written by Mr. Steve Bonta, B-O-N-T-A. After more than 10 years of political activity, in 1958, Moisi and his confreres formed. Now, here's where it gets a little tedious, guys, because there's lots of political factions and different names. After a few paragraphs, it'll get more linear and more easy to understand. So just bear with me while I read through some of this difficult setting up of the political atmosphere in the Belgian Congo. After more than 10 years of political activity, in 1958, Moise and his confreres formed CONACAT, C-O-N-A-K-A-T, a pro-Western, listen to this, pro-Western, pro-free market party intended to represent the interests of the Katanga region of the Belgian Congo. So you see, automatically we see Katanga, and you've probably heard about the Congolese and the Katangans and all this other stuff in some of the 60s rock music. They were arguing for freedom for different varieties of whatever side you were on. But you see, he was representing Katanga, which was a region in the Congo that actually represented his tribe and some and other friendly tribes. And so here's the first indication that the idea that small tribal things can exist is being rejected by the international socialists. They don't like that. They don't want you to have independence and freedom and autonomy in small groups, a la what we talk about here on the network, subsidiarity. Local control, they want centralized control. So, now listen to this. So, Tshombe wanted an American idea, what is that? Pro-Western, pro-free market party in Katanga. Now, how did that turn out for him? Let's find out. So, they formed CONACAT. Their arch rival was the, now this is really difficult, Balubakat, founded by Joseph Sindwe and representing the interests of the Baluba tribe. Balubakat was also pro-communist and anti-West. In the swirl of factions that had sprung up in the years preceding the Belgian Congo's independence, the struggle for political control of the Congo polarized around these two blocks. CONACAT, under the leadership of Tshombe and his right-hand man, Kasavubu, eventually drew under its wing representatives from most of the major tribal groups in Katanga, including the Lundas, that was Tshombe's own tribe, the Bayekes, and the Kibwe. Balubakat, representing the Balubas, both in Katanga, where they had settled comparatively recently, and elsewhere in the Congo, was allied with the communists, who were led by the erratic Patrice Lumumba. By the way, Lumumba ended up being kind of a maniac, but we'll get to that later. Lumumba, a former postal thief, so he worked for the postal service and was a thief, was being carefully groomed by Moscow to lead the vast, mineral-rich Congo into the communist camp. Like most other parts of colonial Africa, the Belgian Congo's borders in no way coincide with natural tribal and ethnic divisions. Notice that. This happened after World War II in Europe. It happened in the colonization of Africa and in Central America. The centralizing thought people, those who want central control, care nothing about families, about tribes, about villages, about independence, about individuals. They always have to control you. So they draw random arbitrary lines around you. And they say, we don't care what tribes you're in there. You're now one country. Well, this had happened in the Congo. And so that's what this article says, that the lines of the Congo no way coincide with natural tribal and ethnic divisions. Think of Kosovo. Think of all the Balkans. We even have a term, Balkanization, where you just throw a bunch of different groups into one country and say, get along. But they don't, because they don't have the same creed. All right. Portions of some tribal groups were left outside Belgian territory, while within the Congo itself, dozens of major tribes, some nurturing centuries-old grudges against one another, had been shoehorned into a single political entity. Yet despite this obvious administrative folly, the Belgians, like other colonial powers, insisted, as a condition of independence, that colonial boundaries remain inviolable. So, sorry, we don't get along. You're not separating. Sounds like the American Union. Sorry you don't get along. You're going to stay in union with each other. What kind of union is that? Are you really united if you hate one another? This doesn't even make sense, right? But this is what we're told constantly. One nation under God. Indivisible. Back to the article. This peculiar myopia severely constrained the course of events in 1960 as the Belgian Congo moved toward independence. In January of that year, a roundtable conference opened in Brussels to plot a final course to Congolese independence. 81 Congolese delegates representing various political parties and tribal associations were in attendance. Both Dushanbe and Kosovo, regarded with narrow suspicion by political elites in the West, advocated, listen to what they wanted, they advocated a loose confederation of largely autonomous states. Does that sound like subsidiarity to you? You betcha. Will the power elites allow it? No. Why are they opposed to local control? Because they're opposed to freedom. But let's find out what happens. So they wanted a loosely confederated and largely autonomous states. Sounds good to me. Didn't sound good to the other side. Lumumba, leftist revolutionary and darling of the Euro-American political establishment, garnered wide support for his advocacy of a strong central government. Sound familiar? Aided by a sympathetic Belgian socialist, communist Lumumba carried the day in Brussels with his plan for a strong centralized government. So apparently they won the election. The communists and the centralizers won the election. With a central government in Leopoldville as the objective, elections were held in May and June 1960, in which CONACAT and their allies won significant majorities. So the good guys did win some majorities at the lower levels. Unfortunately, as often happens in parliamentary politics, the dominant bloc was unable to form a government. Finally, in defiance of electoral results, the Belgian Minister for Affairs in Africa, Walter Ganshoff van der Meersch, asked the unpopular Lumumba to form a government. An indignant Dushanbe demanded three ministers in return for his support of the Lumumbist regime, but was flatly rejected. You listen to the True Money Show on the Veritas Radio Network, Crusade Channel, King Size Truth from Radio Size Speakers. It is a free phone Friday if you want to call in, 844-527-8723. I'm reading 20th Century Heroes. We're talking about Moise Dushanbe. And this is a regular segment of the show wherein I profile a hero from our own era. This guy lived and died, right? Or actually died during my lifetime. So this is not ancient history. Let's go on. So they had an election. Dushanbe's group won majorities in lots of areas, but not enough political clout to actually form a government. So the Belgian minister appointed a communist dictator and asked him to form a government. Dushanbe even was willing to go along with that. He said, well, okay, well, give me three ministers. They said, no, let's find out what happened. The final straw came on July 5th when the Force Publique, the native Congolese National Army, taking advantage of a power vacuum, mutinied. So we had a military coup. Now, there ensued a horrific rampage of indiscriminate rapine, pillage, and even cannibalism. My God, must have been horrible. Congolese and Europeans were victimized with equal ferocity. Lumumba, now this is the guy they wanted to be in charge. Lumumba, perhaps entranced by the bloody chaos that fascinates leftist revolutionaries everywhere, did nothing to stop the bloodshed. Only the prompt action of Moise Dushanbe, who called in military aid in the form of Belgian paratroopers to restore order in Katanga, prevented the situation from worsening. On July 11th, with comparative calm restored in Katanga, Moise Dushanbe committed the unpardonable sin in the eyes of the internationalist establishment intent on divvying up post-colonial Africa among communist toadies. He declared Katanga an independent state. So listen to what happened. So a military coup happens. The country is in a civil war, an uproar. They're raping and pillaging and actually eating one another. The leftist dictator, either liking the idea or not able to do anything, does nothing. A good Christian man stands up, invites in some Belgian help in the form of paratroopers to restore order in one area called Katanga. I think it was a southern province of the Congo. And then says, once he got order established and then said, okay, now we have a working society where we can actually get something done. Here's something good and true and beautiful. He says, okay, I'm declaring Katanga independent from the Congo. We used to call that self-determination. You used to say that was a good thing. Well, maybe not so much anymore, right? According to the commies. Let's find out what happens. From both an economic and political point of view, the move made good sense. Dushanbe had already made very clear his intentions of turning Katanga into a free, pro-Western, free market society. He was well respected and trusted, enjoying the support of European settlers as well as his countrymen. Above all, Dushanbe was an implacable foe of communism. Needless to say, the existence of a prosperous, free, anti-communist Katanga was unacceptable to the leftist claque of Africa's would-be international administrators. So this is what happened. In response to the Katangese secession, that's the word. Oh my gosh. They withdrew. The country was in a free fall. And they said, no, we actually want to live with our neighbor, love our neighbor, and have a businesses and decent society. Can't we have that? In response to the Katangese secession, Lumumba called on his ideological bedfellows at the United Nations to intervene to, quote, restore order in Katanga. The only place that order had been restored, they're asking to bring in troops to, quote, unquote, restore order. Despite Lumumba's transparent hypocrisy, the Belgians withdrew their forces from Katanga, even as UN troops were arriving in Leopoldville to prepare for an invasion of the rebellious region. So you see what the rebels are about? The rebels are about trying to get peace, truth, goodness, beauty, a decent society, supposedly free market, pro-Western. And what does the UN do? It brings troops into the place that's doing cannibalism and says, we'll go smash that region that's trying to right the ship. Nice, huh? Ironically, by the end of July, while chaos raged unchecked in much of the rest of the Congo, the UN was preparing to, quote, restore order in Katanga, the only spot where the violence had been successfully brought under control. Dushanbe rightly feared that UN troops in Katanga were merely a cover for Lumumba's subversion and refused to consent to UN, quote-unquote, peacekeeping. But the arbiters of African independence, quote-unquote, with the signature arrogance of their present-day counterparts, who brought us the Kosovo hecatomb, would not be deterred by any such irrelevancies as national self-determination. UN troops poured into Katanga in the late August 1960 and continued a gradual buildup over the next 12 months. With limited military resources to resist the invasion and still holding out hope for a peaceful solution to the crisis, the plucky Dushanbe nevertheless managed to salvage Katangan national pride by forcing Dag Hammarskjöld, the visiting UN Secretary General, to stand at attention while the Katangan national anthem was played and to salute the Katangan flag. Had the UN truly been concerned with peacekeeping rather than bringing Dushanbe to heel, they might have invented a new cycle of atrocities. They might have intervened, in a new cycle of atrocities springing up in northern Katanga. Bands of Baluba tribesmen, supported by the Baluba Cop, remember that's Lumumba's guys, and calling themselves the Jeunes, that's the youth, were taking advantage of the UN occupation of the south and were embarking on a campaign of terror, torturing and butchering hundreds of Africans and Europeans in viciously creative ways. Listen to this. In one incident, typical of the Jeunes, or I think it's Jeunesse, an administrative officer had his legs cut off and sticks were jammed into the stumps. He was then forced to run before being burned alive. While this was going on, this is done by the guys that Dushanbe had been opposing. In other words, this was done by the Balubakot, the communist insurgents. Were doing this, and the UN was doing nothing to stop that, but they were there to smash Dushanbe, who had already tried to stop those evils from being perpetrated. This is inverted. Whenever you see this kind of inversion, you know there's a demonic influence going on. While this was going on, the UN refused to permit the Katangan authorities to intervene, but did nothing themselves to pacify the region. UN troops remained mostly in southern Katanga, where Dushanbe had long since restored the peace. Dushanbe, still nominally in control of a sovereign Katanga, recruited several hundred white mercenaries, they were called the White Legion, who proceeded to restore order in most areas of the north. This was an unforgivable affront to the anti-white, anti-European leftist orthodoxy. Dushanbe was slandered as a racist and a tool of white colonial interest, a traitor to the cause of black African unity. So you see, once again, we start using name-calling to defame someone. Here's a guy who did the only thing he could to stop murders from taking place. And he's the bad guy because he's now an Uncle Tom, supposedly. By the end of August 1961, the UN decided to attempt a coup d'etat in Katanga and attacked strategic points in Elizabethville, the capital. Failing to capture Dushanbe and many of his confederates, they then embarked on Operation Morthor. That's a Hindi word meaning smash, So they, their operation is called Operation Smash. A couple of weeks later, UN forces comprised primarily of Swedish and Indian troops again assaulted strategic government positions, including radio stations and post offices. Notice, radio stations. Why would they do that? Oh, I know. To keep the truth from getting out. Like the Veritas radio network, maybe? Like the crusade that we're on? Will we be attacked one day? I think we might. And here's the point. Are good people going to stand by and let the good guys get their heads kicked in because they'll do nothing? Because they're guided by something else than what's good and true and beautiful, than what's right and wrong? Guys, we got to wake up. We have to wake up. Now is the time to start doing the right thing based on right principles. And what are those principles? They're the moral law. See how my story folds into my financial question of the day, which is economics a fair or reliable ethical guide? The one thing Tshombe did wrong is he thought he could make an economic model for his society, and that would drive people to want to do it. He wanted to be like America. But you see, we had the wrong model too. We weren't founded on the Christian ethic. So these Swedish and Indian troops are assaulting radio stations and post offices. They also committed widespread atrocities against civilians, including the shelling of hospitals and churches. But once again, Tshombe escaped. He had, however, been disabused of any lingering illusions of UN benevolence. See, he finally wised up and realized the United Nations is not about peace. Good for you, Tshombe. On September 15th, he told a reporter, quote, "Did you think we would run away when my soldiers are fighting and dying for their country?" Here's a guy, here's a leader who's going to actually fight with his army. Unlike us, who just bomb people across the globe, and our leaders sit in cush, comfortable offices, pulling the triggers, but never seeing their alleged enemy or the families that they kill. Brave America. "Did you think we would run away when my soldiers are fighting and dying for their country? We will fight to the bitter end," says Tshombe, "and if necessary, the last battle will be fought here in my home. They have lied to me and have murdered my people. I appeal to the free world." Listen to who he appeals to. "I appeal to the free world, to Britain, to France, to America, to all nations who cherish the principles of freedom and the right of the people to self-determination, to bring this terrible thing to an end." Sorry, Tshombe. America doesn't believe in that stuff. The fighting lasted until September 18th, by which time it became apparent that the UN troops could not prevail. Tshombe and his government were supported in the war effort by more than 11,000 troops, by tribal warriors, and by resident Belgians who were appalled at the atrocities being inflicted by the UN. To his marginal credit, then UN General Secretary Dag Hammarskjöld was also sickened by the bloodshed and was in the process of negotiating a ceasefire when he was killed in a plane crash. While a ceasefire was implemented soon after Hammarskjöld's death, his more brutal successor at the UN, Burmese Marxist U Thant, was determined to smash independent Katanga at any cost. Let's stop there, and I'll pick up with the end of the story of the 20th century heroes in my next episode of The True Money Show. But what does this tell us? So my financial question of the day, you listen to The True Money Show, I'm David Simpson, and you can call in. It is Free Phone Friday. You're welcome to call in about this story or any segment I've talked about, 844-527-8723. Financial question of the day is economics a fair or reliable guide to ethics? And the answer, I'll give it towards the end of the show. But this fellow, Tshombe, is not unusual. There have been more people in a country, more patriots of their own country, who stood up and looked at America as this great idol. Wow. If we could give our people that kind of prosperity, if we could give our people that kind of freedom, if we could give our people that type of government that's constrained itself, then we would be the best country in Africa or the best country in Europe or the best country in South America or whatever, best country in Asia. And they appeal to us on those principles, and they find out that we do not back other people trying to do that thing. That's a question worth pondering. When we come back, I'll tell you a little story about my dad and how he answered that question one time for a Chilean person You may not like his answer, but I want you to. It'll be an answer for you to ponder along with that question. Why didn't we support Moise Tshombe? Hopefully we'll find that out sometime, or we will definitely find out in the hereafter. I'm David Simpson. You listen to True Money Show on the Crusade Channel, King Size Truth from Radio Size Speakers.
Look at them yo-yos, that's the way you do it. You play the guitar on MTV. That ain't working, that's the way you do it. Money for nothing and your chicks for free. Now that ain't working, that's the way you do it. Let me tell you.